is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Schultz, assistant men's basketball coach at Center College, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel.
7:30
Tonight, I'm coming to you from an undisclosed location in Orlando, Florida. Down here with my son's high school team for a little winter, Christmas, New Year's basketball. So hanging out in the hotel room, and we're getting off early because I don't have a family with me and you're making it work on your end of it. So early pod tonight, 7:30.
Yeah, so if anything crazy happens in the NBA tonight, we do not have any information on that. We're going to base everything previous to tonight on our end. Does that sound right?
So Mike? When you hear this, yes, when you hear this on Wednesday morning, we will not have much commentary on the Tuesday night games because the early games are just starting here as we are kicking off, and we will not have any comment on the late games. So all information is pertinent up till 7:30 on Tuesday night.
Sounds good. All right, so Mike, we're going to start with one of our topics tonight. I figured this was the appropriate team to choose. We're going to talk about the Brooklyn Nets, formerly the New Jersey Nets. And I don't know, were they somewhere else before that? Or have they always been Brooklyn, New Jersey?
The New York Nets.
Because they came from the
ABA.
And the New Jersey Americans. Did you know that they were the New Jersey Americans their first year in existence? Did you know that?
No. When was that?
67 to 68.
And then they became the Nets. That was in the ABA.
Yeah, it was in the ABA. Yeah. So it was the ABA the whole time.
All right, I did not know that.
There you go. Fun facts for you. I don't think that's going to make a difference on the answers because all the guys are relatively recent, Mike. I would say, there's two guys that are not recent, but everyone else of the five are relatively recent.
Okay. I'm not sure what any of that means, but I'll go with Jason Kidd.
He's number two.
I'll go with Richard Jefferson.
He's number four.
I'll go Vince Carter.
He is number seven.
Ooh. All right. So Kenyon Martin.
He is not in the top 12.
Okay. Kerry Kittles.
He's number
six. I'm just going to run through.
He's number
six. I'm going to run through every guy from that era.
He's number six.
Okay.
There's no one left from that era, Mike.
There's no one left. There's no one else left from that team. Derek Coleman.
He is number eight.
DC only number eight. All right, so we're talking about more recent vintage, I guess.
Well, there's someone that's still in the NBA.
Right, there has to be. Well, if they're not from, I mean, is Doc still in there?
Doc is not. I'm saying there's someone that's still in the NBA. That's...
Right, I understand Doc is not in the NBA, but I just felt like Durant?
Nope. Not in the top 12.
Neither is Doc. that can't be then ABA records have to be expunged from this particular thing. Okay, so somebody who's still in the NBA who played for the Nets. Man, to have played long enough for the Nets, I'm trying to even think of the era that this guy would have played.
He's on a team that we recently played and beat.
So he's on the Bucks. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, that's correct. He's a big, tall guy. His brother may be on our team.
Oh, Brooke. All right, Brooke
he's
Lopez.
Number five. He's number five.
Brooke Lopez. So what do I have now?
You have what? 2, 4, and 5. There's one all-time great and then one guy that I would have never pulled out of the sky.
So I have... So I'm assuming the number one guy is the all-time great?
That is incorrect. Number three guy is the all-time great. He also played for the 76ers.
Played for the Sixers, and...
You don't go to him if you're sick.
You don't go to him if you're sick? I don't know. I give up. I give up on these.
Julius Erving.
I've said Doc like 10 times.
Oh, I thought you were talking Doc Rivers.
No. Come on, man. I've said Dr. J like – I said it like 4 or 5 times.
Oh, sorry.
I'm like, Doc, the ABA.
No,
Nets. Doc played for the
– I thought you were talking about Doc Rivers.
And no. Okay. So now you're totally – all right. Now you so totally number, threw
the,
me off.
The number one guy, though. The number one guy. There's no – let me see what this guy – this guy's NBA career –
What years did he play?
I'm looking right now for you. He played from 81 to 98, and he spent the first 9 years of his career in New Jersey. So it would have been 81 to 89.
81 to 89. Man.
The blank Michael stops here.
Buck Williams.
There you go. He's number one, Mike.
All right, that makes sense. That makes sense.
He was there for a long time, so.
Long career. That makes sense. Probably somebody I should have got.
He averaged no fewer than 15.5 points while suited up for the New Jersey Nets.
That's and a fun rebound. He was a rebounding machine. Different era.
He averaged double-digit rebounds in all but one of his seasons in New Jersey.
Different era of power forwards when Buck Williams was playing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right, so the whole Dr. J thing just threw me
I apologize. I screwed up by thinking you were talking about Doc Rivers, so I was really
good. No.
I didn't do quite
as bad as I thought.
I apologize for the confusion to my listeners out there.
It's all good.
It's a little bit weird doing a 7:30 podcast. That's what I'm going to
we're supposed to be more awake, not less.
Well, Maybe that break between children and podcasting does me some good or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe all right.
So we might as well just stay there, Mike, and let's talk about the Nets. Now, I know you were standing in line in an Orlando rental car in the first quarter of the game last night, but you know, like I knew that the Nets had been playing well, but I didn't realize that they had won like nine. I think now they've won nine in a row, right? They've won nine
in
a row now.
Nine in a row. Yep.
And they looked legitimately good. Like now, once again, the problem is this though. We know that this is not going to. Is this sustainable? Is my question. Okay, and if it is isn't sustainable, what do they need to do to make it sustainable? Now, once again, they still don't... Seth Curry did not play last night against the Cavs. The Cavs got off to a slow start and then worked their way back into the game. And if they would have at least like been semi-functional in the first half, then they would have had like probably won this game. They played really well in the fourth quarter, but that's going to be another topic we're going to talk about is the Cavs' first quarter struggles, and I've got some stats when we get there, Mike. But the Brooklyn Nets, is this, in your opinion, is this sustainable based on what you're seeing, or do you think that this is just fool's gold and they're going to collapse at some point?
It's fool's gold, and I don't think you can look at it any other way than that. If you look at what this team has been since Durant and Kyrie chose to go to Brooklyn. When Durant and Kyrie are playing and playing well and playing together, they're pretty good. When you threw Harden into the mix, whatever those guys played, 16 games, I think, during Harden's tenure with the Brooklyn Nets, they were borderline unguardable as an offense. And when you have two guys that are as good as Durant and Kyrie when he's right, that's a pretty formidable team. I've said it a million times. When you watch Durant play, you just feel like every single shot that he takes is going to go in. And he is playing at an unbelievably high level and shooting the ball this year at an unbelievably high level. I mean, he just is making everything from the mid-range, and his shot looks as good as it ever has. There was a lot of thought last year, right, when they played the Celtics, and Tatum kind of, I don't know if took it to Durant is the right way to say it, but certainly went toe-to-toe with him. And I think most people would say that Tatum outplayed Durant last year in that playoff series. But so I don't know. Did people think that there was going to be a slight downturn for Durant? There certainly has not been that, and that's not the case. However, on the flip side of that is Durant's leading the league in minutes, which is a little bit scary when you think about his injury history and you think about his age. We know what a combustible personality Kyrie is. You're 5 minutes away from things going completely haywire at any minute. I just don't trust those two guys to either A, stay healthy, because we didn't really talk about Kyrie's injury history, but let's say that's just checkered as well. So what you're saying is if you are going to put these guys in the legitimate contender category, what you're saying is that those two guys are going to remain healthy and happy for the remainder of the season. That doesn't seem that likely. You win 9 in a row and things look good and yeah, everybody's happy. But we know that those things can quickly turn on a dime with either of these guys, both from a happy, unhappy standpoint and also from an injury standpoint. So to me, I don't think it's sustainable just because of those two issues, the combustible personalities and the injuries. When this team's at its best, I don't think anybody disputes the fact that they theoretically can be as good as anybody in the league. When you have those two guys playing at such a high level, look, Durant's a two-time finals MVP. Kyrie hit arguably one of the biggest shots in the history of basketball in that game 7 for the Cavs, and he was absolutely unbelievable in those final three games in 2016. That guy is still in there probably for short bursts, but do I trust him to put it together for the next 50 games and then over the course of 2 months in a playoff season? At this point, I don't see how you can. I don't see how you can put any faith in that.
I agree with you for the most part. Now, 3 years ago, I picked them to win, or 2 years ago, I picked them to win the finals. I
think it's not crazy.
I mean, if they somehow manage to keep it together, would I be surprised that they were good? No, I wouldn't be surprised. Would I be shocked that they were able to keep their ish together? Then yes. Mike, really quick, a sidebar. There was a big thing after the game last night. Someone asked Kevin Love, should they hang Kyrie's Irving's number in the rafters? My response to that is, the fact that they're asking this question is idiotic. Okay? His number is going to be retired. His number is going to be retired as a Cleveland Cavalier. He hit the biggest shot in the history of the franchise. There is zero chance that he is not, despite all his kookiness, there is zero chance, right? His number is going to get hung up. Him, Love, and LeBron, their numbers are all going to be hanging in the rafters when it's all said and done.
So this will be an interesting quiz topic when we finish our win shares, is players who have had their jerseys retired for various franchises, right?
Yeah.
Because the Cavs franchise jersey retirement standards, I would say, are
low,
maybe a little lower than what you might expect, just in terms of, I don't know. I mean, okay, so the Cavs, you want to just take the quiz? Do you know all of them that are retired?
Well, Doherty, Price,
okay, yeah, Nance. That's two. Yes.
Well, Varejão now, right?
Okay.
Zydrunas?
Not Varejão.
Oh, Zydrunas is, sorry.
Zydrunas, yep.
Austin Carr. Bingo Austin Smith.
Carr. Bingo Smith, yep. And there's one more. Old timer.
Now, here's the question. Was this guy, like, there was a big controversy about this guy and they just retired his number recently?
No, this guy had some male pattern baldness and he would occasionally wear gold chains while he played.
Nate Thurman. Bill Russell, is Bill Russell, do we count Bill Russell technically?
No, I don't think you technically count Bill Russell. I mean, I don't think you count Bill Russell.
Yeah.
So I guess
Are you impressed that I was able to name those guys?
Yeah, that was pretty good. But like, you know,
well, it's all from all those games sitting in the nosebleeds, Mike. I can see them. They're right there front and center.
That's true. I just don't know. Like, Bingo Smith, I think, averaged 13 points a game while he was a Cavalier. And look, I love Bingo Smith when I was a kid. There's no better call than Joe Tate when Bingo Smith hit a jumper going, Bingo! There just wasn't – that was a signature call when I was a kid. But the bar is – I would say fairly low when you look at that group of players. So to think that Kyrie's not going to get his number retired after hitting the biggest shot in franchise history seems far-fetched that the Cavs wouldn't retire Kyrie's uniform. But what do I know?
All right. Well, I'm glad we're in agreement on that, Mike.
Tristan Thompson? Delly?
Please.
You're drawing a line of Delly? See, Tristan Thompson, you had to think about.
Tristan, I had to.
Yeah, you paused for a second.
I mean,
no, it's not happening. Kyrie's going to get his number retired anyway.
Draymond for punching LeBron.
maybe. All right, let's go back to the Nets. So your thoughts are the Nets real, not real?
I think they're a regular season real, but they're going to be a playoff failure. How does that sound?
That sounds fair. I think, look, they're not as good defensively as any of the teams that are theoretically, if we say now, and we're going to talk about the Sixers here in a second, which I still don't know that I would consider the Sixers to be part of the elite part of the Eastern Conference. But however, if you look at the way the conference is broken down right now in the East, you have Philadelphia in fifth at 20-12. And then your next team after that at number six is the New York Knicks. So I think we can clearly and safely say that there is a top five in the Eastern Conference, and then there's everybody else. I will be very, very surprised if, barring injury, that any of those five teams that are currently sitting in the top five seeds is not one of the top five seeds come the end of the season. I don't see the Knicks cracking that five. I don't see the Hawks with all their turmoil cracking that five. Indiana is clearly not. Miami, I think, is sort of what they are. Toronto is the one team. I guess we've seen them three times and they've been unbelievable every time the Cavs have played them, and we're 0-3 against them. But they have a positive point differential and they're three games below 500. So I think of any the teams that you could maybe make an argument could creep up towards that spot, I think it would be Toronto, who's actually in 10th right now. But to me, those top five teams, I think, are pretty solid. I don't know what order they're going to finish in, but I think those are the five.
Okay. I agree. I think here's the question, Mike. We could transition to the Cavs really quickly.
Okay.
Do you prefer the Cavs to stay in the four spot?
As opposed to?
The three spot.
I mean, I'm not that excited for them to play either Boston or Milwaukee in the second round. I think no matter
rather play? I know my answer.
I still think I'd rather play Boston.
100%.
I don't think the Cavs have a good matchup for Giannis. I think Giannis would just break them over the course of the season.
You mean like the other day when he had 45 points and, I mean, he was just exhausted by the end of the game which is a good thing for us, right? I mean, they were wearing him out, but at the same time, like,
he was wearing them out.
He was wearing them out too, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think we have a good matchup for Giannis. I don't think that either Jared Allen or Mobley are strong enough at this point to be able to really contain him. And those are really the only two options, because anybody else you throw on him is just too small. Whereas with Boston, it feels like, I think because of the way that Tatum and Brown play, you're more likely to get some games where maybe they're off or their shooting's not as good. And this is probably, again, all clouded by the fact that we're 0-2 against the Celtics. We're 1-2 against the Bucks, and we're 0-3 against Toronto. So you're seeing all
these. No, we're 2-0 against the Celtics, Mike.
2-0. What did I say?
You said 0-2.
Oh, sorry. No, 2-0 against the Celtics. Sorry, 2-0 against the Celtics. So I guess the bias says that I'd rather see Boston just based on what we've seen to this point this year. But I do think that we have – not that every team does it, but I think we have a lot of trouble matching up with Milwaukee versus, look, Boston's been outstanding, although they've struggled again up until these last couple games and what they did to Milwaukee on Christmas Day. They've struggled a little bit, but I still feel like the Cavs have a better opportunity to match up with Boston than they do with Milwaukee. And Milwaukee's still doing all this basically. What did Middleton come back for? Like 3 games, and then he's out again. So I guess I would prefer that you get the home court and stay in the top 4. At this point with the Cavs, that's really what I'm hoping for. Beyond that, in terms of the seeding, I'm not really that worried about who we play or who we don't play, because I think no matter whether you get Boston or Milwaukee in the second round, that's going to be a tough series. And in all honesty, depending on who you get in the first round, I mean, obviously if the Cavs get Toronto, that's not going to be easy. If you get Miami, I think playoff Miami is more dangerous at this point than regular season Miami. And look, I wouldn't mind playing Atlanta, but I'm not super excited to see Trae Young in a playoff series. I mean, I think Atlanta's been kind of a mess, but Trae destroyed the Cavs last year in the play-in game. And we saw what he did the year before, even though they're struggling. I know there's been talk coming out of Atlanta that they may want to trade him, or he may want to ask for a trade, and maybe that Trae and Atlanta aren't long for each other. But still, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I don't think there's going to be a super easy first-round series for the Cavs. So I'd rather see them get home court, where they've been about as good as any team in the NBA at home.
Okay, I agree.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered. I'm worried about the slow starts.
Oh, yeah. So, slow starts. So, I racked up the last 6 games, or last 7 games, the first quarter points they've given up, Mike. Okay, here we go. Yesterday, they gave up 34. The game before that, they gave up 39. Milwaukee, they only gave up 20. Great game. The game before that, I think, was the Jazz. They gave up 21. Then the 3 games before that, 30, 31, 29. Now, we are the leading defensive, and I don't even know if that's still the case after last night's game, but based on the rating, I think we are still. Okay, we were giving up like 102 or 103 points per game, but in the first quarter of 5 of those 7 games, we're giving up somewhere between 30 and 40 points, which when you're only giving up 103 points per game and you're giving up 40 in the first quarter, that's not, or like 35 in the first quarter, that's not good. And yes, they turned it on in the second half. They turned it on in the fourth quarter yesterday, but it was too late. They can't get into this. It's coming. I don't know what they're doing to come out so lackluster, but they need to figure it out.
It's definitely become a pattern. I mean, I feel like, especially against good teams,
Milwaukee being the exception. Like Milwaukee,
yeah, they've done right, and that's a game you win, right? I mean, you've lost, you lose to Toronto, you lose to Brooklyn. Those are two teams that you're probably going to have to compete with at some point come playoff time, and you just let those teams come out and put up big numbers in the first half. It feels like when you're watching them that there's just not the same level of intensity. Like, it's almost hard to imagine that they'd give up
34 in the third or fourth quarter. Like, that just doesn't seem like something that they're going to do very often. But in the first quarter, it feels like they just kind of come out, and for whatever reason, they haven't been locked in. And I don't know what the reason behind that is. I don't know if that's something with Bickerstaff that he needs to change something, whether that's just the players need to bring more intensity right from the get-go, whether or not it's the fact that Bickerstaff's making good adjustments to be able to combat what the other team is doing. I don't know what the answer is, but I know you're not going to beat good teams if you're giving up 30-plus in the first quarter and you're having to dig yourself out of a hole. You think about that Knicks game, right, where they got down big in the first half and they battled back and then they ended up losing the game. When you put yourself down 10, 12 points early in the game or in the first half, you can say, well, that's not insurmountable. But the problem is you still got to climb out of that hole and then get into positive territory. And that wears on you. If you're struggling uphill the whole game to try to get back, all it takes is like one or two key buckets from the other team at a key moment. And all of a sudden you can go from, all right, we battled all the way back to back down three. And now, you know, the team hits a three, they get a defensive stop, hit another three, and all of a sudden you're back down seven. And that just feels like, man, there's nothing we can do. And that's kind of how I feel like when I'm watching these games. That's what it feels like the Cavs are getting themselves into, is they're just getting so far down that things have to go almost perfectly in order for them to come back. And they're good offensively, but they're not great. I mean, they have, at any one time, you have three at least slightly limited offensive players on the floor. I mean, you have Mitchell and Garland, who clearly can get whatever shot they want, and sometimes the ball goes in and sometimes it doesn't go in. But those guys, defenses aren't going to be able to do much with the two of them. But the other three guys, whether it's Allen, Mobley, and whoever you want to throw in that last spot, all those guys are somewhat limited offensively, whether it's because they can't space the floor with their shooting or they're not a shooter at all in the case of Okoro. They can't rely on their offense to dig them out of holes. They got to come out and be ready to play defensively right from the get go. And I know it's crazy for us to be nitpicking their defense, because I'm looking at from a just strictly points per game, the Cavs are still number one in the league defensively. Now part of that plays into their pace and how much they're scoring, but clearly the Cavs problem is not generally on defense in a big picture, but these first quarters have been a problem against good teams, with the exception of that Milwaukee game and games that you want to win.
Yep, I agree. All right, so let's predict for the week, and then we'll move on to the Sixers.
All right, sounds good.
So the Cavs next play on Thursday. They play the Pacers. That's a win, right? That's a win. It better be.
That's a win.
It's in Indiana.
You got to put that one in the win column.
Okay, then on Saturday they play the Bulls. They got to put that in the win column too.
That's a win. This is what makes, I mean, when I was looking at December back at the beginning of the month, it felt like this was going to be a month where they were going to do a lot of damage and could really run off a big streak, which they had a nice little streak there of five in a row. But again, we documented it last time. They lost at New York in a game that they played horribly offensively. You lose to Sacramento at home, and I know Sacramento is not the Sacramento of old, but you can't lose that game, and then you lose at San Antonio. Like, those are three games that, I'm sorry, you shouldn't lose.
Yeah. And then they finished the week up next Monday. First game of the new year, again, they play the Bulls. And that should be another. So once again, do we feel comfortable predicting 3-0 after what happened last week? Now, I picked 2-1 last week, so I was only off by one. You were off by two. I feel like if they don't win these three games, I'm going to be sad.
You got to win these three. You can't lose any of these games. You got to go to Indiana and Chicago. Especially the way this team's played on the road. These are two important games that you should be dialed into to say, hey, this can help us get going on the road. And then the other thing is, you come home for that Chicago game, and I know I'm jumping ahead, but then you got Phoenix at home, and then you go on another five-game West Coast swing where you're going to go play teams.
It's the Disney on Ice swing.
It's the Disney on Ice swing. So that's going to be and then they play – then they come home for New Orleans, and then they go to Memphis. So that's going to be a tough stretch. The first half of January is a tough stretch. And so I think if you don't win those three games, all of them, look, the Cavs are a good team. So anybody that they play, they should be able to beat on any given night. But when you look at that schedule coming up in January, the five-game West Coast swing and then home for New Orleans at Memphis through January 18th.
Home for the Warriors, home for the Bucks, and back-to-back games. You know,
you
you
want to bank those three, the three wins here against at Indiana, at Chicago, and then home against the Bulls. You have to bank all three of those wins. You got to put those in the win column.
Yeah, January doesn't look like a very nice month for us. I'll tell you that much.
Well, you know what the thing is though, you can look at any month. You can look at any stretch of games, and there's just so many good teams. Like, you're looking at everything. You're like,
February looks nice, Mike.
Yeah, February does look a little bit better. I mean, there's definitely more teams that you look at and you say, that's, you know, they're beatable. And we actually end it, and March looks pretty good too. I mean, our schedule's kind of front loaded. If you look, we've got some, we got Charlotte twice in March. You got Washington, you got two games at Orlando to finish the season along with Charlotte. So your last four games, Indiana, Orlando, Charlotte. Who knows? Maybe Orlando, I mean, they've been better. They're getting killed tonight by the Lakers at home, but they...
Lakers, they're going to win a game?
Maybe. I mean, it's only halftime. I think they're up by like 20, maybe, something like that.
You could have gone and cheered them on tonight, Mike.
I could have. No, they're only up 10 now. They gave up a little bit of the lead, so they're up 10 with like 35 seconds to go in the half.
You could have watched LeBron.
You know how much the tickets were, cheapest ticket?
Probably cheap, because Orlando's not a basketball town.
All right, what do you think?
$6.
135.
No way.
Yep.
Holy crap. Orlando's not even a basketball town.
Well, but LeBron only comes to town once a year. Eastern Conference. The Lakers only comes in town once. Yeah, 130. Because I looked. Because I'm down here. I'm like, man, I'm like, why not go check out a Lakers game? Go check out a Magic game. But yeah, $135. So I decided not to do it. I didn't pull the trigger.
Not worth your investment.
I'm doing a podcast.
Listen, you could have been frontline reporting tonight.
That's right. I could have. Could have gone and see my guy, Bol Bol.
Oh, my God. That would have been worth $135 alone.
It might have been. Look, I don't know about you, but in the Wemby sweepstakes, Orlando's my number one team.
I mean,
you put Wembanyama on this team with Paolo, Bol, Wendell Carter, Franz, Fultz, Suggs. I mean, if he's as good as everybody seems to think he is, that's going to be that's quite a nucleus you got if you're Orlando. I mean, they're already winning games. What, they won six or seven in a row there for a while, and I know they're off that right now, but they're 8-2 in their last 10. They've won two in a row. I think they had won like six in a row before that. So Orlando's good. Paolo's good. I mean, there's no doubt that they have a nucleus there that if you're a Magic fan, you got to be excited about what you have there.
Okay. All right, Sixers. They're playing good. Do we believe?
No.
All right, moving on to the next topic.
No, absolutely not. We do not believe. I mean, the reasons are well documented,
it's
right?
It's almost the same thing as
it's
as
worse though. That. It's worse. It's worse.
It's got
though.
James
it's
Harden
worse.
Involved.
It's worse. I mean, at least Durant and Kyrie have some history of coming through in big moments. I mean, Durant, as I said earlier, two-time Finals MVP. Kyrie had three of probably the best Finals games ever in games 5, 6, and 7 in 2016, and then hits the biggest, if not one of the biggest, shots in NBA history. And then you look at Philadelphia. All right, give me James Harden's highlight playoff moments.
Sitting
with a towel
on
his head. Yeah, sitting on it with a towel on his head when the Rockets come back to beat the Clippers. Give me Joel Embiid's big moment. Crying after Kawhi's four-bounce corner jumper to beat the Sixers.
Gastrointestinal issues.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't – like, this team, more than any other team, I know we could say it with a lot of these contending teams that, the regular season, it doesn't really matter, and you got to wait to the playoffs to see what happens or what doesn't happen. With the Philadelphia 76ers, they could go 82-0 in the regular season, and it would mean next to nothing to me in terms of them being ready to win a title if their two main guys are Embiid and Harden. And look, Embiid has been unbelievable. He's leading the league in scoring. If you watch that guy, he just, at his size, what he does in terms of his ability to move and his ability to shoot the ball, I mean, it's almost unprecedented in terms of just his sheer size. I mean, the guy is just immense. And the things that he's doing with the ball and with his footwork, he's phenomenal. And then defensively, when he's locked in, he's as good as anybody in the league. But I still maintain, over the course of 2 months of NBA playoff basketball, are you going to get a healthy Joel Embiid who can give you 40 minutes a night in the playoffs, playing every other day for 2 months? I don't buy it. And anybody who tries to sell you on the fact that Harden is going to come through in a big spot, all I would say is just show me where he's done it before. Show me. And you can't. So I don't know how you can have any faith in this team. That goes without saying that Doc Rivers has a proven history of maybe not being the best playoff coach. I know he won a title with the Celtics, but there's some weird Doc stuff that has gone on. And so I don't buy this team. I mean, whatever. They might finish ahead of the Cavs. They might end up in the third spot in the East. I don't know. But I don't buy it. I would be more than happy to match up with the Philadelphia 76ers in the playoffs.
Okay, I agree with you. Everything you just said, Mike. I don't have anything that I disagree with you on, other than the fact that, once again, would I be surprised if they somehow pulled it together? I would be not 100% surprised. However, I just don't believe that this team is a championship team in the playoffs. I think they are a regular season team, and they could do well in the regular season, but I do not believe that they could do it in the playoffs. That's my view, Mike.
Plus, Woj said that Harden wants to go back to Houston anyway. So,
oh, what a
cop. I mean, how does that report come out, and where is it coming from? Who's the source of it, and what's the purpose of putting that out there in the middle of this season? It makes no sense. It's just a whole nother example of why I would never want to be associated with James Harden or put any faith in the guy. And I don't know where it came from. It came from his camp. It came from Houston. Who knows where Woj got his information? But, I mean, no thanks. No thanks on Harden. No thanks.
All right. Okay, so we're going to turn to more positive things, Mike.
All right, I'm ready.
Dirk Nowitzki's statue. Is it the best statue ever made?
That's a great statue.
I think it is the best statue ever made for an NBA player. I think it's better than Jordan's. I think it's better than anyone's. I think it's the greatest. Done.
It certainly captures, when you think of Dirk and you picture him in your head, you picture that exact shot that is depicted in the statue. And the fact that it has him leaning, and it just captures everything. I mean, it's a perfect reincarnation of Dirk. Like, there's no way you don't look at that and immediately don't recognize. I mean, it's instantaneous that you recognize it. And yeah, kudos to the Mavs and whoever the artist was that created that. It's fantastic. Super well done. And obviously, well deserved. Sixth leading scorer in NBA history, Dirk Nowitzki. Crazy.
Until Durant passes him soon. At some point, right?
Yeah,
Durant
at some point. I think so. Traded for on draft night. Traded for.
Is it a prominent? Should I know it?
Tractor Trailer.
Oh, dear Lord Jesus. Rest in peace, right? He died, right?
Yes, yes.
He had a heart attack.
Yes, yes.
All right. Normally at this point in the year, we talk about the Christmas Day games, Mike. But I'm going to be honest with you, and I know I texted this to you. I didn't watch any Christmas Day basketball. I was at my Molly's family's house for most of the day. And they had the football game on. So I watched Baker Mayfield cook, baby. Dropped 44 points that day. Looked better than our lowly team. But I didn't watch much. I caught bits and pieces, little bits and pieces. And really, my ultimate takeaway is the Lakers are bad. The Bucks are looking somewhat questionable. And the
Bucks need Middleton back. I mean,
And the Grizzlies need to shut their mouths, because you can't go talking crap, talking about dynasties, and you haven't even. I don't agree with Klay Thompson often. You saw that post game, right?
I did. Yeah.
Like, you can't go talking about dynasties and you haven't even won at all, won it once, and you're sitting here talking about a dynasty, dude. Get your dude to stay on the floor and not get in foul trouble all the time. Dude, he's in so much foul trouble all the time. Right? Like,
yeah. He's had that problem from the very moment that Jaren Jackson came into the league.
So I guess I should have said his name, but.
Yeah, but he's just extremely foul prone, and he's been that way since he came into the league. But it seemed like a little bit last year that he was starting to get that under control, and now it's back again. And the Grizzlies, like, there's a part of you that likes the fact that they're kind of brash and they're young and they're talking a lot of smack and they're this and they're that. But it's also, like you said, you got to win something first. And I know, look, they made it the second round last year and they gave Golden State a good series and Ja was out. And Ja's one of the most likable, watchable stars in the league. But I think you start treading on... I think the ground gets a little shaky when you're talking a lot of smack.
The shaky game, Mike? Yeah.
And that you haven't – Shaky's Pizza? That yes. You haven't won, and you haven't really won anything. Like, there's a lot of talk. Dylan Brooks does a lot of talking. I don't know.
And I'm over the, oh, he almost dunked it for Ja Morant. I'm over it. Yes, does it look awesome when he jumps over a dude and get called for a charge? It does look awesome. He didn't even make the dunk. I don't know how many times I've seen it in his NBA career, but I'm guessing I'm close to double digits in him almost making an awesome dunk.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like, oh, sweet. Yeah, I almost, Coach Mike Klinzing almost touched the rim today, okay?
Almost. I got the net.
But I'm just saying, like, come on now.
No, I get it. I mean, I think Ja is still one of the most exciting players to watch in the league.
Oh, at this point, we would still say, if we were redrafting, based on what we've seen so far, I probably would take Ja right now. Now, Zion's making a case. He's making a case, right? He's making a case. However, he's got to stay healthy. And I'm not ready to believe in that yet. And I know Ja's had some injuries too, but he's played in far more games than Zion in the 3 years in the NBA. And if he continues to play at this rate, Zion will probably pass him up. But right now, I would say, I'm not saying a theoretical, because if we were talking theoretical, then I would probably take Zion. But I'm saying, based on their body of work right now, I would take Ja. Would you agree? Body of work now, not theoretical. Or are you back to... Are you sticking with
if
Zion?
If you're drafting backwards for what you've gotten out of each of those guys to this point, then yeah, I think you take Ja. I still think if you're drafting forward, I think if you just pick a guy today, I still think that 3/4 of NBA GMs would take Zion. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's like I've said over and over again, when Zion's been on the floor, he's been historically great from a statistical standpoint. Now, he's never played in a playoff game. There's a long way to go.
He's going to play in a playoff game this year as long as he's healthy.
As long as he's healthy, I would say that he's in good shape. But who knows? I would personally still take Zion, but I understand. If you make the wrong choice there, if Zion's the right choice and you make the wrong choice and you get Ja, I mean, obviously Memphis would not change that pick based on what they've gotten out of Ja so far and probably what you're projected to get out of Ja moving forward. But I still think that the ceiling is higher on Zion. So NBA teams love ceilings.
Yeah.
So not that Ja's ceiling is low. Ja's ceiling is super high. I mean, he could be a top five player in the league. I don't think he's quite there yet. He's probably in the top 10, but he can get to the top 10. He can get to the top five.
All right.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
So the last thing that I have on the docket.
Okay, I got one more thing for you at the end.
Speaking of injuries.
Okay.
Anthony Davis has a stress reaction in his foot. Whatever that means.
Does he play again this season?
I think so. I think he plays again. What do you think?
Does he come back and play the remainder of the season after he comes back?
No.
Okay, there you go. I think that's the answer. I think the answer is this injury doesn't sideline him for the remainder of the season.
Does he play a playoff game? Oh, wait, the Lakers aren't going to be in the playoffs. What are I talking
about? Yeah, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think so. Not unless he comes back and plays 30 or 40 games, which I don't think that's going to happen. I could see him coming back. Although, by the time he gets back, who knows where the Lakers are in the standings, and you've got his foot. I don't know. Maybe he sits out. It's just, it's so predictable that for whatever reason, his career has been snake bit. The guy, you can say, well, some guys are injury prone, or these are freak accidents, whatever. Anthony Davis just, he's going to get injured. I mean, it's just the fact of life that AD at some point is going to go down. And look, he was playing tremendous basketball, probably playing as well as he ever had for that 15 or 20 game stretch. And you just can't count on it. And I don't see where anything in his history points to the fact that he's going to come back and be healthy. So I think he comes back at some point, but my guess is he's back for 2, 3, 4, 5 games, re-aggravates whatever it is, and at that point he gets shut down.
Fair, Mike. That's fair.
And the Lakers might as well shut down their season at this point. I mean, really, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I just don't. Who are they leaping in front of?
Golden State's playing really bad right now.
They're bad, but are they Lakers bad?
I don't know. I mean, would you be okay? So here's a question: this or that, Mike?
All right, I'm ready.
Would you be more surprised if the Brooklyn Nets make it the NBA Finals, or if the Los Angeles Lakers make it to the playoffs?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think I'd be more surprised if Brooklyn makes the NBA Finals.
Okay, I agree. All right, I agree with that. This or that? Would you be more surprised if James Harden
has I don't know where this is going.
A productive playoff game. Only one. He only needs one.
He's one? Okay.
One productive playoff game, or the Los Angeles Lakers get to the 10th seed for the play-in tournament.
Come on. James has had productive playoff games before. At some point, Philly will be down 3-0. He'll put up a 40-10-10.
40 burger?
Yeah, put up a 40 burger when they're down 3-0.
Okay, here's my last one, Mike.
Okay, all right.
This or that, which is more likely?
Okay.
Ben Simmons refusing to shoot a layup in a playoff game, or LeBron James playing in a playoff game this year? Which is more likely?
Which is more likely? I would say Simmons refusing to shoot a layup in a playoff game.
Okay, there you go.
Or unable to make a free throw in a playoff game. How about that?
There you go. That's our version of NBA This or That with Mike and Jason.
I like it.
Okay, so you said you had one more thing for me, Mike.
So as we were talking about Nowitzki, I wanted to go back and I mentioned that they traded Tractor Trailer for Dirk Nowitzki. So I want to go back and maybe we can form this as a this or that. You are the Bucks. You could have this or you could have that. You could have, if you were the Bucks, you could have Dirk Nowitzki and Steve Nash, or you could have that Tractor Trailer. Which one would you rather have?
I think I would go with Dirk Nowitzki or Steve Nash.
Do you want the details of this trade? I didn't realize that this was as bad, that it was as bad as it was. So here's the whole scenario. Three-team draft night trade. Here we go. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
The Mavericks draft Tractor Trailer with the number 6 pick. The Bucks draft Dirk Nowitzki at number 9 and Pat Garrity from Notre Dame at 19. The Mavs then trade Tractor Trailer to the Bucks for Dirk Nowitzki and Pat Garrity. The Mavs take Pat Garrity and trade him to Phoenix for Steve Nash. Crazy. That is just insanity.
Was Pat Garrity that good? Like, I mean, he fell to 19. I'll be honest with you when I say, if you would have said, did Pat Garrity, this or that, I'm going to give you two names. One of these guys played in the NBA and one of these guys didn't.
Pat Garrity was like a 6'8", 6'9", white guy, could shoot it, sort of a, I don't know. I mean, he was fine. He had a good career at Notre Dame. He played in the league for a couple of years, but was never obviously anything. Nash at the time was playing behind, I believe he was still behind Jason Kidd there. So you get him out of Phoenix and you bring him to Dallas. And then obviously we know that the friendship that blossomed between Nash and Nowitzki and that whole thing. But I mean, it's crazy to look at that.
Pat Garrity played 552 games in the NBA.
So
he played 1 year with Phoenix. And where did he spend the rest of his career?
Orlando?
It is the city you're in.
All right. There you go. See?
His highest points per game. Oh, where was it? I just saw it. His highest points per game was 11.1 in the 2001-2002 season.
So look, Pat Garrity was a decent NBA role player for the time that he was in the league. But again, you just look back at that and it's crazy to think about what went on in that particular trade. I mean, it's just Tractor Trailer obviously never materialized in any way, shape, or form as a good NBA player. And
okay, one more for you. Pat Garrity, over under. Did Pat Garrity make $20 million in the NBA?
$20 million, let me think. Well, as a number one pick, and that was in the era where I think that they could sign for whatever, I would say yes.
He made $22,788,021.
But see, I think that's because that was during the era when those guys, there was no rookie salary caps. So those guys could kind of sign.
2008, he made $3.8 million. And promptly got injured and played in two games.
There you go. That's, I guess.
I wonder if he put on a fat suit like James Harden.
Nothing wrong with making $22 million in your career, Pat. It's all good. That is all good. Kudos to you. Kudos to the Mavs for the Dirk Nowitzki statue. As you said, that thing's impressive. It's a great likeness of Dirk Nowitzki. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out online. It's really well done.
Yep. All right, Mike. Anything to talk about? I don't want to talk about the Browns. Listen, what a clown show. A clown show. The Browns are a clown show. Depressing. We go. Njoku can't even catch the ball. He can walk, run around without a shirt on, but he can't catch a ball in the fourth quarter. Not that it would have ultimately mattered, but you got to catch that ball. I mean, hit him in the chest. I mean, God, we're paying that guy a lot of money, too. Ugh.
Yeah, you got to make that catch. And It was fun. It was fun to watch that game in the cold, and I always enjoy cold, snowy, wet football
games. To be honest with you, I don't want to say like I don't think Deshaun looked terrible in that game considering the conditions. Like, did he look great? No, I don't think he looked terrible. But I mean,
there were catchable balls that guys didn't help him out on. Cooper falls down in the end zone. That should have been a touchdown pass.
And, well, because then that gets us to a field goal game or right. in a situation. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
And we would have been in field goal range.
It's always next year, baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Anything else, Mike?
I don't think there's anything else. I guess the only other thing I would say is Jokic, right? Jokic, he's been just the 40, 15, and 15 that he puts up on Christmas is just ridiculous. And it's going to be – if the Nuggets end up in first in the Western Conference where they are now, which I think they very well could, wouldn't surprise me. I mean, what that guy's doing, you're going to have a hard time not voting him for his third straight MVP. I mean, he may not get it, but I don't know. You're going to have to make a pretty compelling case against him because what he's been doing is just – I mean, it's phenomenal. The passing is ridiculous. The shooting percentages, just the way the guy works. And he doesn't look like what you think a guy that's an NBA MVP should look like, but he's phenomenal. And if he continues to do what he does and keeps the Nuggets up there at the top of the Western Conference, I think he's got a really good chance to win another one. And we'll talk more about the MVP as we move forward in the next couple of weeks, but I think he's got to be right there. So that was my last point.
Sounds good, Mike.
All right, let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for listening. We appreciate it, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.